Hello, my name is Kate Cooper. I'm Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute of Leadership and Management. Welcome to this podcast, which is one in a series of 5 podcasts focusing on getting used to change, something that's really relevant to all of us at the moment. The Institute of Leadership and Management recognises great leadership as being multidimensional. We identify 5 dimensions of leadership: authenticity, vision, achievement, ownership and collaboration. And we've broken down those 5 dimensions into 49 components, which enable us to organise our content, but also helps individuals access their leadership support that is immediately relevant to them. The components I'll be talking about in this podcast is leading change, part of the dimension of vision, because change is about getting ready for a different future, a future that one has a vision of what it might be like. I'll be focusing on 3 particular aspects of change: what we actually mean by change, models of change management, ways of understanding change, and those very important emotional responses to change. Change is a process of altering the way in which things are done. And I often quote Peter Drucker because his insights not only are sensible and practical, but they're just as relevant today. And what he says about change is that if you want something new, you have to stop doing something old. And I think what's really interesting about that is that idea that you can't overlay new processes and procedures on top of the old ones. You have to dismantle, stop doing the old in order to make room for the new. And it's often the old that we like to cling on to. But change is necessary. It allows us to improve and develop the way we're working to ensure that we're a more sustainable organisation. And it's also necessary because it's often a response to what's going on outside the organisation, or at a team or individual level, a response to what another department or team is doing and how we respond to that. Those of you familiar with studying management and have thought about it before will know that one model of understanding change or understanding where change might come from is PESEL analysis, where we look at different aspects of the external environment and say, well, how relevant are they to us now? And I think what's particularly interesting about PESEL analysis at the moment is that every one of those 6 areas is being disrupted, changed beyond recognition in some areas. So, for example, the politics. We've seen political leaders behave very differently. Party politics, depending on the political system in the country that you come from, is changed. It's certainly changed here in the UK. All those agonising discussions and unpleasant discussions to a large extent about Brexit have receded into the background. Politicians are now working towards for the nation, working with opposition parties. Economic changes has been immense, and I think the impact of those changes are going to be felt, obviously, for a considerable amount of time. We've seen sociological change, our expectations of each other, of what we want from government, of what we think society is, has changed fundamentally for a lot of people. Again, here in the UK, we're seeing great initiatives, self-organising groups, helping each other to self-isolate, to stay in at home. Technological change is undoubtedly going on, but not front of stage, because I think the people who are engaging it desperately finding new ways to manufacture ventilators, face masks, got science teachers, groups of 6 formers, small businesses coming together to share their knowledge of technology, to switch their production capability into things that are needed. And in a few months' time, we're going to be hearing so much about those innovations that are essentially happening here in the UK. The NHS, our National Health Service, has called for volunteers, and the way that they're going to manage those volunteers and what they need them to do is very much like an Uber taxi app. You know, what's needed, when, who's available to do it, go and do it. And that is an example of real innovation, although the actual technology obviously existed somewhere else. We've seen changes to our legislation, and what we are also hearing about are the environmental changes. And this is the lobbyists, the environmental groups who are drawing attention to the benefits of less travel, to the disadvantages, to some of the farming practices and the deforestation. And all of this is happening at the same time. And for most organisations, one of those six areas would have been more important than others. Various people have looked at change and developed ways of thinking about it. I think no more so than Kurt Lewin, who not only identified the idea of force field analysis. Let's all look at what's going to help the change happen and what's going to be an impediment, a resistor to it. And so any change that you're thinking about implementing, do think, where's the energy to make it happen coming from, and where is the resistance to what we want to happen? Where is that coming from? And it makes you see a much bigger picture rather than just being carried away with the enthusiasm of what you think the change will succeed. Another contributor who's significantly to change theory or change management models is Cotter. He developed some work in the 1990s that revisited in 2014, and he identifies an 8-step model for change. You have to create something, you build it, you enlist support, and he is very mindful of encouraging people to keep that energy, to celebrate your successes, to not allow the change to wither in the way that so many change programs do. There's a book written by Campbell McPherson called The Change Catalyst, and he asserts, he's on YouTube, do have some look at his videos, that 88% of change programs fail. Now, he supports that with various data, and that's a very, very stark, pessimistic figure. But I think we've all been involved in change programs that have disappointed, let us down, absolutely not delivered what we were expecting it to. Part of the change conversation, if you like, or the discourse in organizations, and it's invariably people who stop the change happening, but sometimes that resistance to change is actually a really rational response. If you're thinking about a huge change program that many people, processes, systems are going to be affected, the change architects, the powerful people who are writing the plans and the Gantt charts, might not fully understand the implications of every place in the change process. And those closest to it might be able to see very quickly this isn't going to work. So that resistance might be far from a block, is a very rational something and should be listened to. So I've talked about Cotter, I've talked about Lewin. Finally, I'd like to think about challenging really some of those ideas. The models of Cotter and Lewin are attractive. We understand them. The reason they're so enduring is because we get them and they make sense. And we can sort of see, oh, yes, that happens here. Or I can see that's a good idea for me to be able to do that. But Balogun and Johnson caution us about thinking that somehow that change is this wonderful linear process that you do step one, tick, proceed to step two, because all change initiatives, plans are based on some sort of sense of what the future will hold. And as we've learned so well in these last few weeks, you cannot predict the future. You don't know what's going to happen. And however well you plan, you are going to find there will be unintended outcomes of what the results of whatever actions you take in order to achieve that different version of the future that you're hoping to see. Finally, Ralph Stacey is a great contributor to how we think about certainly how things happen in organisations. And he looks very much at he calls them complex responsive processes, where people, through conversation with themselves and with others, through interactions, through relationships, are always changing their understanding of what's going on, what's happening. And if you think about a big change program or even a small one, those daily conversations with people making a new sense or interpreting a new instruction or a new insight differently, sharing that with the people that they work with. So you really don't know how that is going to play out, because it's in this constant state of being created by the people who work there. So if you want great change, start with the people who are going to benefit from the change, who are going to make it happen, because the sooner people own that process of difference, because I don't think people are resistant to things that are good for them or things where they can see the benefit. And actually, most people recognize that really the only way for organizations to survive and to be sustainable is to adapt to whatever's going on. And we have seen that so much recently with this quick shift to home working. And maybe if you'd asked people 4 weeks ago in the UK, certainly, do you think you could work from home? They would have said no. And all of a sudden they're doing it. So thank you for listening to the podcast. Please go on to our website, www.instituteLM.com, for other resources that you'll find interesting, and do subscribe to this and our other podcast series. Thank you.